Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Let's go! Let's go!
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat. This is our weekly heat check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me on the other line, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. Always happy to talk Miami Heat basketball with you.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. I think now that we're a full week removed from the Dwayne Wade decision, I know like the last time we really went in depth and talked about it, we were basically working through our emotions. It was almost a group therapy session, so I wanted to take another, now that we're a week removed, revisit it, kind of re-gauge where we're at, maybe talk about a few other things that have surfaced, some rumors, some reports, and just our, and maybe some other thoughts and feelings that we've had. Now that it's been a whole week. And then at the tail end of this episode, we'll talk about the Russell Westbrook trade rumor, and I guess we'll just have fun speculating about that because it's the offseason. That's what we do. So let's just dive right into it. Now that Dwayne Wade has been to Chicago, he's been in the Bulls facility, it's a done deal. I think for me personally, I just have had a lot of time to just kind of sit back and reflect on it. And just how it all went down, I'm still not sure I completely understand why it happened. But from all of the reports from the guys like Ethan Skolnick and Dan Le Batard and all those guys who are much or very much plugged into the whole situation, more so than anybody else in the country, it sounds like this was, as we suspected at first, so much emotion involved. And I thought Haslam's comment earlier this week was particularly enlightening, how he said, there's been a lot of feelings that all came to a head this offseason. So the idea that this isn't just, you know, a couple of months or a few days or whatever right. into it and Wade was hurt and left. Like, this has been maybe a couple of years, maybe several years even, maybe. Which I think is interesting. But for me, I think, and we never talked about this, but Wade was on vacation for so long of that, like, all but one day, right, where he wanted to make that decision, that week where he wanted to make that decision, he was on vacation in another country with LeBron James. And he was obviously very emotional when he made that decision. And I just don't think that you ever want to make such an important life-changing decision in that state, especially when you're out, you know, being on vacation, doing whatever you're doing with LeBron and his wife and Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union and all that. Like, I don't know at what point did he have the time to just really sit down and think all of this over without getting too emotional and try to remove himself from all of that. I still do believe, and Wade even mentioned he wishes he had like another month to make this decision. I believe to this day that if Wade would have had another week or two or a whole month, he'd still have re-signed with the Miami Heat. Do you agree with that?
That's tough to argue one way or the other, because if you say, as many people have, that, you know, that this is something that's been building to a head for a long period of time, maybe that week-long vacation of talking with LeBron and Chris Paul and other players, you know, maybe it's just enough to kind of light the you know, strike the match that sets off the explosion. So maybe would a month have given him enough time to cool down and change his perspective? Probably not. Maybe he jumped the gun a little bit, but I don't know that he necessarily would have had a much warmer feeling towards Riley and the Heat front office. My question is more about like what it was that might have got him to that point in the first place. You know, what is it that he could have been so upset about that he had felt some animosity just below the surface, and that it was just enough to have this 1 week long vacation, maybe a low ball offer for the second or third consecutive year that might have been just enough to say, you know what, that's it. I'm done. I can't take this anymore. After 13 really great seasons, I'm ready to move on and try something different and look for more money wherever that might take me, whether it's Milwaukee, Denver, or Chicago, which at the end of the day, I think those were the only three potential suitors that might have been able to overpay for somebody like Dwayne Wade. So I don't know if he would have made a different decision. My gut tells me he wouldn't have.
Hmm. No, it's hard to tell, right? Because we still don't even know exactly what led him to make this decision. I think it was just he was such in a dangerous place. He was so emotional over all of it, and I just don't I don't know that he didn't, but I just don't see the time to really sit down and be thoughtful about that in the way that he did. I felt like he just felt so rushed. And if he's just really emotional and raw like that, and he's talking to guys like LeBron, who already left the Heat and is so happy right now in Cleveland, where he is home, quote-unquote, that I feel like when you're that emotional, your best friend can really sway you either way. LeBron could... I very much doubt that LeBron was pushing Wade to stay in Miami, right? I highly doubt that LeBron's number one goal was just stay in Miami. Leaving Miami is a huge mistake.
Oh, absolutely not.
Say that. He doesn't have much credibility. I think, you know, your best friend doing that can really just sway you in such a way that it might... I'm not to blame everything on LeBron, obviously. I'm sure Heat fans are already doing that, but it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, it's...
But if I may... I mean, don't, as friends outside of the basketball court and from different teams and everything, doesn't LeBron have, you know, generally Wade's best interest at heart?
Chicago and Cleveland is much closer than Cleveland and Miami. I'm just saying.
I mean, yeah, sure. But even the geography of that, notwithstanding, look, I mean, Wade's going to be committed. It's not like he's going to have days and weeks off where he can just be like, you know what? I'm going to hit LeBron up and go spend some time at his house in Akron. It's the regular season. I don't think they have a lot of time to chill out like that. I mean, it's one thing when you guys come over, you know, during a road trip, or maybe, you know, if you're going to be playing at each other's cities, respective cities or whatever, and you're going to be spending a time to go to dinner and have drinks or something along those lines. But during the regular season, both these guys feel like, to me anyway, I feel like they're so committed, they're not going to be spending a lot of time together. But yeah. As friends outside of basketball, when their respective playing careers are over, they'll continue to be friends.
Well, I don't disagree with you saying that, like, yeah, LeBron does have Wade's best interest at heart. But I don't, like I said, like, I just don't see LeBron from a place of credibility or even his own belief that the best thing for Wade, bar none, is to stay in Miami. I think LeBron is the kind of person who thinks, no, go look at all of your options. Be in charge. You're the player. You're Dwayne freaking Wade, dude. You can do whatever it is the hell you want, man. Like, they're lowballing you. Like, if Wade, like, LeBron's not the most objective guy, right? He's just as emotional as anybody in the league. So I feel like if he's feeling Wade's pain, isn't he to maybe a point where he's going to say, no, dude, go get yours. Do whatever you want. Respect is important.
Right. But isn't that like isn't that benefiting Wade then? Isn't that like looking out for Wade's best interest?
Sure.
Like let's say you and a friend are work for the same company. There's always going to tend to be, you know, issues with management. There's always an us versus them mentality when it comes to employees and employers. Right? Would you give me that much?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, when you're around coffee.
Employees always find stuff to complain about. That's
100%. Sure. You're around the water cooler, around the coffee maker. You're
that's
damn.
That's to you, all you can heat staff. I know what you're talking about behind my back.
Can you believe Wes assigned me that stupid story once more? I can't believe it. another deadline. So anyway, so there's always that us versus them mentality. And that's prevalent in every workplace environment. Sure. So here these guys are, you know, having been there, LeBron has seen Heat culture, Heat front office up close. He knows what it's like. And he made the break. Like if you were working with somebody else and you joined another rival company – doing whatever it is that you do professionally outside of podcasting and writing, you go to another rival company, but your friend is still stuck there, you're going to be like, so is boss X still riding you? You know, is he still giving you a hard time? Is he still giving you these jackass assignments, et cetera? And then finally he's like, yeah, man, you can't believe, you know, I went in there to ask for a raise thinking, you know, my yearly review is up. And I'm thinking, you know, I've had a great year. I didn't get promoted, but I led several projects and we did such a good job. And, you know, the equivalent of the playoffs or whatever, he's going to pay me a lot. And instead you get this low ball offer. And then you're talking to your friend and you say, well, that's ridiculous. Go somewhere else. Get paid. Get yours. And you have to look at it also for what Wade wants. Does he really think he's going to compete for another championship? Hell no. Golden State's too strong in the West. In the East, Cleveland's likely too strong, and I don't see them getting unseated by anybody. So at this point, you're kind of fighting for anywhere from second through eighth in the Eastern Conference seedings. Can you stay in Miami and get underpaid and take a chance that maybe you'll wind up securing a free agent in the future or having a good playoff run as you did this year? If you don't know what Chris Bosh's situation is like, maybe it's not that great a situation to come back to. So why not get paid knowing that you're not going to compete for championships, despite the fact that you've got these close personal feelings with South Florida and the Heat organization and everything else? This isn't going to hurt his legacy. And you and I did talk about this. I mean, Wade is going to be, as he said, a Heat for life. It doesn't matter where he plays the next 2 years in Chicago or anywhere else.
I find it interesting, though, that Wade really wasn't involved at all in the Kevin Durant chase. I don't think it would have changed anything, but it wouldn't have hurt, right? I think no matter what, Durant was going to the Warriors. But it is interesting that Wade didn't find himself involved. It almost, from the outside, it looks like he didn't care if they got Durant. So I don't even know if Wade, and this isn't wrong, like Wade's done so much in his career. I don't know how much he really cares about going through that whole championship run again. I don't know if he's even...
He's talking about it.
Yeah, he doesn't even have it in him. I don't even, he doesn't even probably believe he does. So I think that's interesting. And if that's the case, right, because this has always been the argument, why at 35 years old, 34 years old?
34 and almost 35.
At this point, now he wants to go get his money? Like, he's a 35-year-old veteran who just played more than 70 games for the first time in, like, 5 years, and now he wants to get paid? Like, this guy's been somebody who has always taken the sacrifice monetarily for winning. You know, always to help, you know, facilitate big roster moves and all that, and now he wants to get paid. Like, of course the Heat weren't willing to do that. Of course they took him for granted. That's what he's always done. That's like, you know, he's almost enabled the Heat organization, and that's very true. I 100% agree with all of that. But maybe Wade just doesn't care about winning another championship, or really feels that it's even realistic, and if it's not realistic, maybe at this point he's just like, look, I'm just going to go get as much money as possible. He's not really making that much more money. I think somebody did the math on it. He's only making like $3 million more because the state of Illinois has income tax and Florida doesn't. So like that $3 million drops to $3 million.
If we're to believe that the Heat eventually up their offer to $20 million a year.
Right, yes. And I think that's from everything. From all the reports, I mean, Levitard's reporting that they upped it to 21 almost a year.
But that's also kind of maybe... when you realize the shit's hit the fan and you've already let him stew in his own angry juices for a week and you know he's probably going to move on elsewhere. He's already looking to secure meetings with other teams and you kind of go, look, man, I'm sorry I only offered you 10 before. How about 21? You know, just so kind of like a half-assed.
The report that I heard was that this is from Levitard said this on his radio show, that Wade and the Heat did have a meeting right when free agency started, and I guess Riley had mentioned, we're going to go after Durant. We expect to get a meeting with Durant. We're going to take care of you on the back end. It might only equate to $10 million. It could be more, upwards of more than $20 million. Are you going to be okay with that, basically, or that's what we're going to do? And Wade left that meeting saying, they just lowballed me at $10 million. That is Levitard's report. That's very interesting, and I think you and I had talked about that when that report first surfaced. Like, is this real? Like, do we buy this? Like, that just doesn't seem like the way the Heat would do things. But in the grand scheme of things, and maybe a more complex situation, it does certainly make sense. But all of that said, I don't know that. Mickey Arison getting on that boat with Dwayne Wade and saying, okay, man, like, shit's hit the fan. Let's offer you $21 million, and this will save us as far as a PR, a PR standpoint is concerned with the fans of South Florida. I just, like, Wade could have accepted that, and if he did, then Miami's plan would have backfired on them. They wouldn't have put themselves in that situation. I don't think they would have left it to chance like that. I don't think that anybody is smart enough to know, like, where that line had really been crossed. Like, if they're ultimately giving Wade the decision there, they could have. I mean, there's more than enough ways to leak out, like, we offered him $20 million, it's fine. Like, he didn't take it, and he took a little bit more in Chicago. I think that they didn't really need to do that. And I think that they genuinely wanted Wade back after, you know, they found out that Durant wasn't coming back.
But, I disagree. I disagree. I think at this point, I think the offer was a half-assed one and one made strictly because of the potential PR or to save face as an organization. Because I think if you remember, after the rumors or the alleged report of the lowball offer came out, or after the report of the alleged lowball offer came out, then everybody's going, what the F? You know, this is the organization that prides itself on Heat life or Heat family, Heat culture. and loyalty and all these things, and you do this, which is completely antithetical to that. So you're kind of, you suffered such a PR loss, especially in lieu of, in light rather of, you know, other, you know, free agents that are much less qualified than Dwayne Wade getting paid so much more money. And you offer him $10 million? I mean, a guy
so
like
think
Tyler
that
Johnson.
They offered him the $20 million, $21 million, whatever it was. And maybe they didn't genuinely want him back, but they said, right. Okay, we Durant's already in Golden State. And Wade's the best free agent available right now. So worst case scenario, he leaves. And the report gets out that we offer him $21 million. And the fans shift their attention on, that's not enough money for you, Dwayne. Or B, that he does come back and we run it back again, which is ultimately probably why they didn't guarantee him the third year. The worst case scenario, Wade comes back, you run it back, he's still the best free agent available, you have a decent team for a year. Where right. The other case scenario is that he leaves and you still save face as a PR from a PR.
I think they knew all along that they had angered him to the point. I think Riley and Arison and everybody else involved knew that they'd already kind of lit that bridge on fire, and that it was just a matter of how soon before Wade would burn it and go elsewhere.
Okay.
So at that point, you already know he's leaving. Why not try and make everything look as nice and hunky dory as possible and leak out that you've upped your offer? But by that point, it's already too late. You already know it's already too late, and you're kind of just hoping that he'll leave.
It was pretty amazing how. Do you remember when Luol Deng became a free agent when all this free agent stuff started happening? And I think you and
sure.
I texted about it where the Heat tweeted out a video of Luol Deng highlights from the season before.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like
yeah, right before free agency started, yeah.
They never did such thing with Dwayne Wade, I don't think.
I'm trying to think. I don't. There was like...
But
was,
I guess the greater point is that, you know, once Wade had made his decision, right, to go to Chicago... Before Wade could even say anything, right, the Heat released so many thank yous, and they took out that thing in the Miami Herald, and they put up the billboards, I think, and then the tribute videos, like just the barrage of tribute videos and thank yous from the Heat social media accounts, and just that, you know, on top of all of the tribute videos that fans made and all of the thank yous and overwhelming support from Twitter by fans,
right,
and all that stuff was bombarded onto Dwayne Wade before Wade ever got out into the public. So,
no, I think that was afterwards.
No, because Wade's first thing was at that gym, right? At his camp thing. That was his first statement. Or
no,
not
I
really,
think,
but he wrote that letter to the AP, right? Or released it to the
Yeah, I think he'd already agreed. I think, yeah, they, that's the whole thing. That's another part of it. It's like almost within hours of Wade announcing his decision to go to Chicago, then Miami's kind of going a quick 180 and saying, thank you, D. Wade, for 13 great years and putting that ad in and then having the 13 moments of Wade's spectacular career and
right.
All Dwayne Wade.
Yeah,
exactly. It's almost like they were really prepared for his departure. Kind of, yes, part one of a plan to clear up as much salary cap space as possible. One, get rid of Dwayne Wade. Two, potentially get rid of Chris Bosh. And then all of a sudden, you hit the reset button on a team that you thought was going to be completely different 2 years ago when you signed both of them to a short-term contract. Or at least you signed Wade to a short-term contract. You signed Bosh to a long-term contract, thinking he'd be a much more important, vital part of how the team moves forward. And unfortunately, his issues with injuries just haven't allowed him to do that.
Do you think if Durant decides to sign with the Heat, Wade stays?
Yes.
Right. Me too. There's no way, right? Even
I think
though all that stuff is the same, right? That's what I'm getting. That's the interesting thing, that regardless of where Durant went, it was going to be Hassan Whiteside was priority one, because without Whiteside,
right,
you probably don't get Durant. So then Durant's number two. You get the meeting with Durant.
Right.
Durant either signs or doesn't sign. And then your other priority is, once we figure out how much money we have, we know what to offer Dwayne Wade. And so all of that is the same regardless of where Durant signs. So I do – it's kind of interesting, right, that if Durant comes back, there's no way Wade could leave. There's just no way Wade can leave that.
Well,
but
I think –
at the same time, he's still not a priority just as he never was. And he makes – the Heat can offer him less money in that situation.
But I think that then it changes as far as the complexity or the context of this Heat season then is – they're legitimate title contenders with Durant and Whiteside back on the fold.
I agree with all of that. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's why he'd want to sign up for another run, even at a little bit less money, just for the chance to add a fourth ring.
Yeah, But just the pride thing, the respect thing in a vacuum doesn't change.
No, and I'd still think he'd have those same kind of lingering, that same kind of lingering resentment that's been building the earth for years. I mean, you look back at it, and now in hindsight, we start hearing that he's pissed off at Riley about the forming of the Big Three, the fact that he's been getting these lowball offers over the course of his career, that they've taken him for granted and everything else. That, again, he's very happy with the work he was doing. He's very happy with the success, both individually and team-based, that he's achieved over those 13 years. But there's comes a time when you want a little bit of credit. Look, you remember even years ago when LeBron joked about Dwayne Wade opting out? This was when they were still in the Heat. And he joked about Dwayne Wade opting out. You remember what his words were? He wants that Kobe money.
Yeah.
And you wonder whether or not he knew already that he wanted to be honored the same way that Kobe did, you know, so with a two-year-long retirement tour, et cetera.
Yeah. If that's the case, then the Heat were really faced with get Durant and I'll come back for another championship run.
Right.
Or pay me the Kobe contract. Give me 3-4 years. Give me 3 years guaranteed. I'm only going to play 3 more years. Give me 3 years guaranteed for a big price. And I'm going to run this thing out for 3 years. And you could see why the Heat wouldn't want to do that. And the more and more that I think about all of this, I don't want to blame anybody. It's wrong. I don't know what Wade's feeling. But the more and more I think about this, the more and more I start to blame Dwayne Wade a little bit. And that pains me to say it. But it's...
Blames him for what, though? I don't understand.
For who kind of screwed the other one more? And I do feel like this is going to come off very like first takey, but sure. I do feel like Wade. I don't know how else to word it. I do feel like Wade screwed the Heat more than the Heat screwed Wade. I feel like Wade was always willing to take less money, and then suddenly he's not. And I do think at some point the communication must have been there that Wade wants that Kobe deal. He wants the money. He wants the farewell tour. That's what he wants. And at some point, Riley was like, well, I'm not going to do that. And
yeah, but I mean, to counter that point, it's like how much less money? We've talked about the number of sacrifices he's made over the years. But it's not like he sacrificed a whole shit ton of money. It's not like he took a discount from $20 million to $10 million from one year to the next. He's given up a few mil here and there. He's opted out of a long-term contract that could have paid him more, but he still wind up making it on one-year deals, et cetera. I mean, it wasn't like he was sacrificing a lot of money, but it's something to sacrifice a little bit of money, still knowing or thinking that you're the priority, being wooed somewhat, which I think is important to all NBA players, but particularly still Wade, because of all the sacrifices he's made for this team in particular. He wants to be wooed still even after 13 years. But it's one thing to say, can you take $17 million or $18 million? But to go from $20 million, what he made last year, and to offer him 10, that's a pretty hard pill to swallow, my man.
Well, even if they would have offered him 20, he still wouldn't have been the highest paid player on the team. We go from a guy who was a rookie, and he immediately became the face of the franchise, and he immediately went out and got Shaq. And Shaq's just his nature. He's immediately the face of anything he's near, right?
Yeah, and that burned out very quickly after just 3 years.
Absolutely. And then after that, the Heat were really bad, and the Heat were bad through Wade's prime, but even Wade back then, I mean, he was making $13, $14, $15 million a year, which is a lot back then, but you look at it compared to what people are making now, and it's very little. But,
you know, he's no Jermaine O'Neal.
No, he's no Jermaine O'Neal, right? Jermaine O'Neal, like, yeah, he was making more money back then than Wade was. Wade's never been the highest paid player on the team, even if the Heat were going to offer him at the max $21 million this year. Chris Bosh still would be still getting paid more. Hassan Whiteside, I believe, is getting paid more than that. Now we look at the Bulls. Wade comes in. He's making $21, $22 million, whatever it is. Yeah. He's the highest paid player on the team. His first year in Chicago. Jimmy Butler is second. He's making $17.5 million.
And that's going to play out well for the Bulls.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler should take that well.
And knowing that he's in the prime of his life. Because then it's going to be another situation. Like, it's ironic how things wind up repeating themselves. The same issue we're talking about. Wade was at his prime in 08 through 10, but he was the second paid player on that team, second highest paid player on the team, or third to Sean Marion. I don't even know. Maybe Marion was making more. Sure. I know Jermaine O'Neal was certainly making more. But now look at Jimmy Butler. He's entering the prime of his career, and he's probably making he's making more than Rajon Rondo, but he's making less than a 14-year veteran in Dwayne Wade. I'm sure he's going to be really happy with that 5-6 years down the road.
Do you think if the Heat had been A, good, and B, paying Wade, the highest paid player on the roster, that those down years, right, between Shaq and LeBron, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Wade stays? If he has his moment as the guy making, I don't know what the max back then was, but let's just say it was $20 million and that was the max, and he was making the max, and he was the highest paid guy on the team, and the Heat were better, like maybe the whole Sean Marion thing worked out, and all of the things happened the way that, you know, would have at least led them to a couple playoff runs, even if it wasn't more championships before LeBron got there. Do you think Wade's still here now? I mean, I know that's super hard hypothetical to figure out.
Yeah, I don't think it plays a factor, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, look, he signed the best deal he possibly could before those years played out.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody went back and said, you know, hey, we'd love to pay you more. You know, they just couldn't. They gave him the best deal he was possibly capable of making, and he signed it, and he took it, and I think he was happy knowing that he was making as much as he did. It was his second year contract. It was a different setup altogether. I don't think it played a factor.
I think last year was the year that really did it, when they gave Bosch the big, or two years ago, they gave Bosch the big extension.
And but that, again, in a vacuum, that was such a necessary move, right? I mean, we always
because they took him for granted, right? He's like, Wade's not leaving, Bosch might.
Well, yeah, Bosch, I mean, Wade and Udonis opted out of more lucrative deals, and then we were worried about whether or not we were going to be a 30-win team with the absence of LeBron James and nobody to fill that role yet, and Chris Bosch was millimeters away from going to Houston. I mean, he was right there.
Yeah.
And so I think it was such an important move to sign. I mean, I'll never forget the joy, the elation of hearing that Chris Bosh came back.
Yeah.
Like, as within a 24-hour period of knowing that LeBron was going back to Cleveland, the joys of being able to retain Chris Bosh and later on Chris Anderson and guys like that, that made it – it almost made the loss of LeBron that much easier to handle.
I think we talked about it that summer, that when Bosh re-signed, he immediately leapt LeBron as far as, like, Miami Heat power rankings.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the gratitude, the appreciation was so great that, I mean, it was a perfect move at that time. And maybe there's some short-sightedness there, but, I mean, he's trying to save a franchise from the greatest heights ever, you know, the Big Three era from 2010 to 2014, and all of a sudden you're going to plummet to a team that's not even capable of making the playoffs.
And who's to say Dwayne Wade doesn't leave earlier than that? It's still, you know, right at the tail end of his second prime, so to speak, to go join a championship team if the Heat are just hot garbage now. I don't know, but what was the point?
We've talked about this already, but, I mean, we're sure now. I mean, the knowledge that he wanted to play three more years is kind of perfect because he signed for 2 years in Chicago. You know that third year is going to be spent here.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think ultimately it just makes it easier for him to come back. You know, Kobe in his last year, he was still a starter. He still played whenever he wanted, however many minutes he wanted, and got any shot that he wanted. It was Kobe's show. And I do think that that could have been Wade. You know, I don't know how many more years Wade has left. But with him leaving and then eventually coming back, as we were saying, right, as we're assuming right now, for maybe that third and final year, it makes it easier for him to maybe come off the bench and play a supporting role as opposed to just being the star on his road trip on the way out. So I think it'll serve the Heat better long term. But it's just this is so interesting, and I think the reason why we're still trying to comprehend it and figure it out is because, and you know, especially juxtaposed to the Kevin Durant situation, we've been talking about Durant's free agency for 2 years now. And the report that he might go to the Warriors happened, what, 6 months ago? We've been expecting this and talking about it. We've never expected nor talked about the reality of Wade leaving, because nobody really thought it was a real thing. And that's why I think with Durant going to Golden State, we're like, okay, this makes sense. Like, I get it. And we're not really talking about it so much now. Like, I do think it's kind of weird how little national conversation about Durant's decision, right? Like, the way when LeBron left Cleveland for Miami, it was a shock. Like, I don't think anybody's really talking about the decision, but they're talking about what that decision obviously means for the league.
The impact, yeah.
Right, absolutely. But with Wade, everybody's talking about the decision, because really, it doesn't really impact either of these teams. Cleveland's still going to win the East. But it's just that we're like, whoa, what just happened? Just because we weren't prepared for it. And everything, like, all the news is coming out. Like, before, the reports that maybe Durant was looking at Golden State, that was all much before it actually happened. Now we're hearing all the news after the fact. And so in between that night running up and all of like the guys on Twitter and all the reports that were happening and Woj kind of giving us a play-by-play of how it was going down, and then after all this information that's been coming out through Skolnick and Lebatard and all these guys, it's just, it's fascinating to see how this all really happened. Just all, it's not just money. It's not just winning. It's not just rings. It's not just, you know, location. It's, there's so many things at play, and for once it just came down to this emotional, you know, vague idea of respect, and it's just, it's rather interesting to me.
I agree.
All right. So, now that we're looking ahead of the to the future and what the Heat can do and all these things, let's just have fun speculating about stuff. Russell Westbrook, who tweeted it? Was it Woj that tweeted it, that the Thunder might be moving on from him sooner rather than later?
I think Howard Beck from Bleacher Report said there was that the Thunder front office was looking to make a deal sooner than anticipated.
I just automatically give our credit to Woj. But
no, I deserve this.
Shouts out to Howard Beck. So, as we do, Russell Westbrook, Miami Heat, when's it happening?
Soon. I think it's going to happen before the start of the season, obviously. I think it's within the next month they'll have a deal in place to bring Westbrook to Miami.
So, I know you're being facetious, but...
Kind of, sort of. I mean, it just, on the surface, doesn't it just scream Riley?
It does. And Riley is opportunistic, right?
Yeah, I got the mother pepper, you know.
He reports and he's like, all right, I'm going
to
think
he's waiting
this.
To pounce.
Yeah.
That's what he did with Dragic last year, you know, or 2 years ago when he heard he wanted out. He's like, oh, really? Well, let me tell you about this place called Miami. It's really nice here.
So I'm glad you bring up Dragic. So the trade that makes sense is Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow for Russell Westbrook. Now, Heat fans cringe at the idea of moving on from Winslow. And I do want to just take a moment here to talk about what Winslow means for this franchise right now and what he symbolizes and if he is a movable object in a trade. You know, we saw the Heat way back when move guys like Caron Butler and Lamar Odom.
Sure.
Got Lamar Odom an all-star, Caron Butler with a lot of promise for Shaquille O'Neal, but wouldn't move Dwayne Wade. Is Justice Winslow in that Dwayne Wade kind of untouchable mode? Now, he didn't have the rookie year that Dwayne Wade had, but Dwayne Wade's not here anymore. There is a lot of value from the quote-unquote homegrown guy. If the Heat move on from Winslow to go get Russell Westbrook, and who's the homegrown guy? I think he's so beloved by fans right now, and he's got so much upside. Like, I don't think, obviously Riley doesn't really care what the fans think, but he's got so much upside, I think it's hard to move away from him. So I just kind of want to get your take on where is Winslow right now as far as a trade piece, do you think?
I think he's very tradable. I'd have to say he is. I think we're taking into consideration how Heat Twitter, which represent maybe the more educated 5% of the Heat fan base, I think your typical fan sees names on the periphery, superstars, and those are the names that are most appealing to Pat Riley also. I think he's more than willing to trade away younger unknown pieces, and I think Winslow still fits that category. We saw him up close in Summer League. We talked to Juwan Howard about it. You know, he really likes the way that Winslow plays. He sees a lot of opportunity for him to become a playmaker. I wrote about that today for FanSided. And, you know, we recognize, Heat Twitter and you and I specifically, we recognize that there's potential there. But I think Riley would be willing to move that potential for a proven factor. And he's always done that. He's always skipped out on you know, European draft picks because you never know. He would have taken Winslow over a guy like Kristaps Porzingis. You know, and now after their rookie year, you would say that would be ludicrous, knowing that Porzingis is a much more finished product that had been anticipated and clearly has a higher ceiling than Winslow does, at least at this point.
Yeah, he's like 7'5".
Literally and figuratively, yeah, right. A higher ceiling. But I think Riley just doesn't trust rookies. It's very rare that he'll put a lot of faith in what they can do. You're right that Winslow didn't get a lot of chances in his rookie year, but I think at this point, you don't know what you're going to get out of him, and I think Riley's more than willing to take the risk to move an unknown factor for a proven one.
But that proven guy, Russell Westbrook, his contract is expiring after this year. So now, with that in play, do you think it's worth, after you've already traded two first-round picks for Goran Dragic, do you also basically trade, so if you're able, if you do this hypothetical trade of Winslow and Dragic for Westbrook, mm-hmm. essentially you're trading two first-round picks, a lot of, and Justice Winslow, another a lot.
So three first-round picks.
Yeah. So three first-round picks, one of at the minimum, one of which is a top-10 pick for Russell Westbrook. Now,
I think the discussion was, you know, because of the ease with which Dragic re-signed in 2015, I think there was always an understanding in play, right? He didn't meet with other teams. He didn't really entertain other offers. He even took theoretically less money than what he possibly could have made from teams like L.A. who were willing to pay him and New York who were willing to pay him. So he took a slightly discounted deal here that, and, you know, in hindsight, given the increased salary cap, is actually financially reasonable. I think that kind of same agreement would be in place with Westbrook's representation.
So with Dragic, though, his value is at basically an all-time low, like, you know, for his career after he had made the All-NBA team. His value, he wasn't playing well. He was buried in a backcourt, you know, with Isaiah Thomas and Eric Bledsoe and all these guys.
Sure.
Right now, Westbrook's value has never been higher. And I do think that you've already traded two first-round picks for Dragic. I just don't see how... It made sense back then. You had Wade, you had Bosch, you had Whiteside. Go trade for Dragic. That made sense. I don't, like, with all these guys gone, with Bosch's future in question, I just don't see how you can trade. And given that you don't, you're out of those two first-round picks now, right? You but already have a guy like Winslow who could be a supporting star on maybe a championship-level team. I don't see how you can trade a guy like Winslow to get Westbrook, and then what do you have? You have Westbrook and Whiteside? I don't see that as a way to build a team when you don't have the draft picks.
The way that Riley looks at building teams is completely different than what all other 29 teams are doing. You know, I think he's going to continue to bank on the ability to draw big-name free agents or pull off that big trade. From his first move in Miami to acquire Alonzo Mourning to every move he's made since then, it's all about blowing the short term for something that can ignite a team, you know, or blowing long term for something short term rather, because he's traded away young players before, he's traded away draft picks before. Look, he made a draft pick trade for a very older Tim Hardaway who had balky knees in Golden State. Nobody knew he was going to have the career he had here, but Riley insisted that he keep his weight down, that he had these weight requirements built into his contract, for instance, to pick up extra incentives along the way, and Hardaway arguably had the best years of his career here in Miami.
So
it's a move and a risk that I think Riley's been willing to make, and I think he sees Westbrook as being the next face of the franchise, more so than what Winslow is or is capable of being.
I don't disagree with that. And to go back to your point before, to backtrack a little bit, you said if they trade for Westbrook, there's got to be an agreement in place.
Absolutely.
I think that that's not likely. I think that with everything happening in Westbrook's world right now, with his buddy Durant going to Golden State, I don't see Westbrook saying, like, you know what? Yeah, Miami wants to trade for me. I'll have an agreement in place with them. Or maybe, like, I think Boston still has a better offer if they want Westbrook, that they can come in and grab him and probably outbid Miami if it's just up to Sam Presti. But, you know, maybe Westbrook does carry some weight there where he's like, no, I'm not going to agree to that trade. I don't know if he's got I don't know what kind of trade clauses he has in his contract. I don't think
he has any.
Okay, so.
But
maybe Boston wouldn't do that trade then, right? So.
Right.
I think.
Given Westbrook's, you know, interest outside, though, like his fashion line and the fact that he's getting more endorsements, opportunities, and things of that sort, don't you see like him and I mean, LA would be a great fit. New York would be a great fit as well. But can't you see him thriving in a place like Miami just because of his interest outside of basketball?
I do. I 100% agree with that. I just don't think that it's going to happen because I don't see Westbrook saying right now that he's going to agree to, like, a wink-wink, I'll re-sign with you guys with Miami right now. I think at this point he wants to play out the rest of this year and he'll make his decision in the summer. I think he wants to show out. I think Westbrook is the kind of guy that thinks, I could put up, without Durant here, I could put up 40 points a game.
And can he make more money if he signs an extension now than rather than waiting until the offseason? I heard
know.
That was
because that's interesting, right? Because the cap is jumping again. I don't know the numbers.
Right, kind of like what James Harden did in Houston, and I think there's a similar situation there. So
yeah,
he'd be.
But I don't know how much of the money. I think Westbrook at this point, you know, he's going. He sees Durant going to chase rings. I think he wants to go to a place where he's going to have an opportunity to compete. And I think it serves. I think it's smarter for Westbrook just to play this year out. See, number one, what he can do with the Thunder, because the Thunder are still good. Like if we're talking about like second place teams in the West.
No.
You know, they're in that group all by, like, obviously the Warriors are on a league of their own, but they're in that group with, like, the Grizzlies and the Clippers and the Spurs now without Tim Duncan. Like, they're kind of there.
I don't think so.
Well, either way, like, he's got to believe, like, he's a top 10 player in the league. He wants to see where he can carry them. But even more than that, kind of take the temperature of what the rest of the league is to see maybe where his best situation to thrive is. And I don't think that he can make that educated decision right now. And that's what scares me, where, you know, when the Heat traded for Dragic, they got him for half a year on an expiring deal, and he resigned. But his value was so low. Westbrook's value is going to be so high right now. He's going to be arguably the best free agent available if Durant re-ups and Steph Curry re-ups. Like, he'll probably be the best free agent out there. And I think that his value is so high, I don't think you can trust a guy for a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, you're re-signing here. Like, every team is going to want him.
I think it's going to happen. I've never been more sure of it now. I don't know why. Like, you just talked me into believing it.
So
as much as you want to argue.
Just disagreed with? I must be.
Absolutely.
I make such a bad argument.
No, I think Westbrook is, there was a great piece today via Jason Concepcion of The Ringer. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but it kind of verbalized what everybody has always said about Westbrook. He's a force unto himself. Like, part of why he was able to work so well in Oklahoma City was because he was able to kind of balance the nature of his attack with a guy like Durant, who was much more of a silent, quiet assassin. Westbrook is just such a force that I think he's going to be able to – whatever team he goes to, or should he stay in Oklahoma City, it's going to be his team. He's going to define it. And right now, I think there's a great blank slate that he can take over in Miami, and I think he would be – I think he would want that opportunity, knowing that there's a power void left over by Dwayne Wade's departure, knowing that South Florida is a great culture for him, the colorful aspect of it, everything else, the opportunity that it has, the fact that there is already a championship culture in place, which there isn't in Oklahoma City. Those things, I think if any place is going to appeal to Russell Westbrook, I think it would be Miami. Boston, you still don't know. Yes, there's a championship culture there, but you're talking about one that's decades removed. Well, I mean, 2008 was an aberration, I think. I don't think you can look at that.
Shots fired at Celtics fans.
I think they would say that. I don't think there's nothing from that team left over there other than Danny Ainge making bad trade choices or, you know, bad draft day choices. So Brad Stevens is a great coach. But is he arguably substantially better than Eric Spoelstra?
And I think for a guy like Westbrook, you're right. Like, the Celtics are so removed from their championship days. Miami has more of a championship culture to a guy like Westbrook than Boston does.
And the continuity there that I think he finds appealing.
Absolutely. With Riley in charge, I mean, there's a cachet there. And that's why, ultimately, I don't know. Like, I guess if I'm going to collapse my own argument onto itself, does Westbrook, is he going to be impatient, right? Because Durant could have opted in for another year and went and just to see what the Thunder could do. After all, they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. He could have just re-upped for another year and got even more money next season. But he realizes he's 27, recognizes his window is only so big, and he's like, I'm not going to just waste another year. I'm just going to go win a championship right now and go in the state. Maybe Westbrook is like, I don't want to just go through this another year. Where I was saying maybe it's best for him just to wait out the season and just kind of take the temperature of the landscape of the NBA. Maybe he's so impatient that he's just like, screw this, I'm out. Like, I want to go to a place like Miami with that championship mentality. I think they can build a roster around me immediately.
Right. And I'll sweeten the deal a little bit more, include Andre Roberson on the trade.
Oh, fantastic.
You laugh now. But I don't know that you're going to suffer a substantial downgrade as far as defense is concerned from Justice Winslow to Andre Roberson. He's an underrated defender.
Yeah, but he can't play center like Winslow.
That's true.
I love Winslow's versatility. Now, I'm not here to argue that Winslow is better than Westbrook. I just think that, I don't know, man. Like, if it looks like the Thunder are going to make the trade to somewhere, I see why Riley would want to throw his ring in the hat. Because of the worry that, like he just did with Dragic, wherever Westbrook goes, he's going to re-sign him out automatically. So if Boston gets involved, he's going to say, well, ultimately I need to win a championship. Boston with Al Horford and Westbrook, they're better than us immediately. But if I can get Westbrook, we're better than Boston. We're the second best team in the East. We can challenge the Cavs, and who knows from what happens from there. So then, yeah, maybe he does move Winslow and Dragic. If that's even enough. Again, I don't know if that's even enough. I think perfect world is that Westbrook plays out the season and signs in Miami, and the Heat don't have to move any assets.
Well, they'd have to get rid of, as you and I argued before or discussed before, I think they'd have to move Dragic anyway.
Right, yeah, you'd have to get, yeah, you replace Dragic and maybe
ship him to Houston. Better,
right? Like, if you can, if, like, super best case scenario, Westbrook signs, just signs, you know, no strength, like, you don't have to trade anything, but then you also able to trade Dragic for other pieces to play with play around Westbrook and acquire new assets even if you wanted to just trade him for draft picks. And, I mean, super, super best case scenario, I guess, long term would be if the Heat end up in the lottery, get a top 10 pick, take a good player in this loaded draft, sign Westbrook, trade Dragic for some extra pieces, and all of a sudden the Heat are right there with the Cavaliers. And Bosch comes back, and he's good to go.
Yeah, that is all very ideal. It just doesn't seem...
And Winslow becomes an all-star. And Josh Richardson continues to shoot 50% from three.
Okay,
and
I like it.
Lives up to his contract. And so does Tyler Johnson. This is a really good scenario.
It is. It is perfect. I'll tell you what, though. I don't want any trades for Blake Griffin being discussed.
Not when Bosch is...
I don't care.
Two of them together.
I mean, God forbid, but I even if Bosch was in a morgue somewhere, I would not want the Heat to acquire Blake Griffin.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
You just don't like his... The anything. He punches people?
Yeah. Not people 100 pounds and a foot shorter than him, you know? If he's going to bully somebody around, which seems unlikely, you know, maybe pick on someone his own size. I know that's a...
I feel like Tyler Johnson would annoy Blake Griffin. I think Blake would just nail him.
I don't know. I just think Blake is very immature.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want Blake Griffin. It's not even the whole... That's not a good look. But he's not a versatile player. Like, he can play power forward, that's it. Like, no. It's not somebody you can't... He's not somebody that you can move to center.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think you can play him to center. No.
I mean, they haven't had to because of DeAndre, so maybe another team he might have that kind of opportunity and he might be able to handle it. I mean, he's certainly strong enough, right? What would be the problem? He's not quick enough?
I just don't think he's a good rim protector. Like, just as a straight up and down rim protector, I don't think you can play him there. And I think you'd be missing out on it. His talent is getting on the elbow, setting screens. I mean, unless you just played positionless, right? Like maybe the Heat did with... But Bosch was a better pick and roll defender. I don't know, man. I think Griffin is... He's not a bad defender, but he's like mostly offense. Like what he gives you on the offensive end is so valuable, but I just don't see him... I don't know.
Well, as long as I don't see him in a Heat jersey, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Have we uncovered everything on the Westbrook side? Dragic? Are we excited about Dragic for this year?
I personally am. I mean, I think you and I did talk about this, and, you know, this seems like a team much better suited for his strengths of play. And I think, we talked about how undervalued and underappreciated he might be some members of the Heat fan base, but I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he can be a more consistent shooter, and that's something that you definitely want to see. Hopefully he's working on that as we speak. But I think as far as the overall pace of this Heat team, I think he's going to be in control of that, now that Wade's gone. And I think he's going to be able to push it and make it substantially faster. And I think it's a team that's going to be better. Now, I think I saw from Ethan Skolnick that he's picked Miami to be a 30-plus win team. I don't know if it's too early to make any kind of prognostication, but do you agree with that?
So this team reminds me a little bit about the a little bit, not completely, of the Portland Trailblazers last year. Mm. Look at the pieces and you're like, who's good on this roster? I mean, yeah, you got Goran Dragic, he's good. Who else is good? Like, is Whiteside good? Like, we think he's good, but is he, like, $24 million a year good? We don't know.
He's no Mason Plumlee.
He's no that's for sure.
Or Myers Leonard, either.
Right. I think with enough young pieces like Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Justice Winslow, and Whiteside even, there's enough young guys who have yet to hit their peak that you could say, all right, maybe right now this is not a very good team, but if, you know, 50% of those guys make enough of a leap, this team could be much better than what we think. So, and I do think that there's a certain... Last year we talked about it all the time. The parts weren't greater than the sum of the whole, right? Like, it wasn't... Did I say that right? Did that make sense? Did I just sound like George W. Bush?
The sum wasn't greater than the... The whole wasn't greater than the sum of its parts.
Right, but it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Right, the parts were better individually than together.
Okay, yes.
There we go. We got there. That was the case last year, and a lot of it ended up just being, you know, I'll take the ball and I'll score some, you take the ball, you score some. That's basically what the offense looked like for so long, and it struggled, and the spacing was all wrong and everything like that. So now that the team makes a little bit more sense in an X's and O's, you know, sense, I think that they do earn maybe a couple wins or maybe 5 wins out of that. Out of, like, not 5 wins better, but they just get 5 wins out of making more sense. I would say that that's a fair, maybe even a low way to look at it for the regular season. Then plus Dragic, his addition by subtraction, he's going to have a good year this year, right? Like, with Wade out, he's going to run the offense, and they're going to play fast. And we saw when Dragic plays fast, he is a much better player. So Dragic is going to play better. Winslow and Richardson should both play better this year. Whiteside, at the very least, is going to be about the same. And I don't know. I think a lot of it depends on Bosch, obviously. But
sure.
So let's say with Bosch, I think this is a 42-win team.
Wow.
Without Bosch, I think... right around 30 sounds reasonable.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that Winslow and Richardson are going to make enough of a leap to really do some stuff, and I really think that we're overestimating maybe the loss of guys like Luol Deng and Joe Johnson and underestimating how much more this team is going to make sense chemistry-wise on the court.
And so you think that the loss of Deng and Joe Johnson makes up for, like, you know, 10 losses? Or 10 wins, rather?
Oh, you think that... You're asking me if Deng and Johnson leaving equals 10 fewer wins?
Yeah.
I think Wade leaving equals a lot less wins.
Mm.
I think Wade had such a good year last year, and he was the de facto guy when everybody else didn't really know what to do. And also, I'm still a little bit worried about Whiteside's contributions when Wade's not there to feed him points like he did so much last year. I mean, Whiteside owes 50% of that contract he just signed to Dwayne Wade. I mean, the way he just fed him dunks was unbelievable. And we saw that started to pick up with Dragic toward the end, but mostly in that first round of the playoffs. I gotta see that over the long term to see that Whiteside's got that running mate that he connected with.
Maybe.
What do you think?
I don't know. I'm strangely optimistic about this team, and I think you and I talked about the potential moves and the fact that all these guys are on short-term deals and maybe a little bit hungry for something and hoping to prove themselves on a bigger stage than they have and are looking to get some stability. You know, guys like James Johnson and Derek Williams. I mean, I think Tyler Johnson. I mean, you know, this is an opportunity. They've got the big contract. Now they have to go and earn it. Like, yeah, they could all crap out. Like Whiteside, John, Tyler, everybody. They could just say, hell, we got our money. That's it. We're done. The expectations are lower than ever. I don't have to do anything. But conversely, they could be looking to prove themselves more than they ever have now that they've made that money. Now, it could all just be, you know, a contract year might have been what propelled them last season, you know, but now I'm optimistic that they're going to be looking to prove themselves at a higher level. And if that's the case, I think they can be a 40-plus win team easily, even without Bosch.
Oh.
With Bosch, I think they could be a 50-win team.
You've convinced me. I forgot about the Derek Williams and James Johnsons and all that. Out of those guys, plus the young guys already that were already in-house, I think you can get three guys that play at least three guys that play better than they played last year, and I think that matters with all the chemistry. Okay, so how many games did they win the year after LeBron left?
Who, Cleveland?
The Heat.
Oh no, 36 wins?
36. All right. Yeah, they're not going to be that bad. That team was torn apart by injuries, too.
Yeah, I mean, that was different. That was a completely different year.
All right. I'm with you. I think if Bosch doesn't play, I think that's a big blow, and I think that they could end up maybe in the high 30s. But it's not as if this team doesn't have an identity, right?
Right.
They're going to play fast. Dragic is going to handle the ball. It's not like when LeBron left and they had to figure everything else out again. So, all right, we got a couple more minutes here. Let's go the other way. I know we talked about how good they could be. We talked about maybe swinging for the fences for Westbrook. I do want to get your sense. What does it take for this team to tank, i.e. trade Goran Dragic for basically assets? What does it take to do that, clear out that cap space for a run in a 2017 free agent, and tank to get into the high lottery and get one of these really good players that are coming out? First of all, do you think it's realistic if the Heat are, let's say they're 10 games below 500 going into the All-Star break, which is pretty bad. Let's say they're 10 games below 500 going to the All-Star break. Do they start shopping Dragic?
Well, I think it's one, by that point, Bosch will have either proven that he can't play or just chosen to retire. So I think he automatically leaves a void there where you say, oh, this team is not going to be able to get much higher or much better than what they've had and what they've proven, you know. Whiteside would likely have been hurt too, I think. And so now you're looking at a team that has no length, no size. Willie Reed starting center, it doesn't really, you know, give me a lot of optimism. As much as I'd like to think that he's capable of being a good solid player, I don't think he's a long-term solution as a starter at this point in his career. I think that's the case. So if you lose Bosch to retirement or injury, you lose Whiteside for this year to injury, then you kind of say, oh, yeah, we're done. This is a team that's not going to necessarily compete this year and maybe not even the following year. So let's just go ahead and clear everything out and then start shopping Goran Dragic. And that's where you make a move, maybe ship him to Houston, as we've talked about before. I think that makes sense on a lot of levels.
I think Houston makes a lot of sense to reunite with Mike D'Antoni. Atlanta makes sense to me. New York, even, if the Derrick Rose thing doesn't work out.
I don't know if anybody's ever considered it, but what about Minnesota for Ricky Rubio? I mean, I know they're looking to unload him, and he's probably significantly cheaper.
Yeah, I don't know if Minnesota would do that, though.
You think Rubio has a higher ceiling?
No, I just think that with Dragic, he's 30, and that team's window is not the same as Dragic's. I just don't see the reason why they would get Dragic.
Okay.
But what about this, though? L.A. wants to win. What if they offer D'Angelo Russell, who that locker room stuff is real and it just doesn't work out and ownership's already given up on him, which we've heard reports of, right?
Mm.
What if the Lakers say, we'll give you D'Angelo Russell for Goran Dragic straight up? That's an interesting trade, right? I don't know if they do it or not, but it's an interesting trade.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't do it, obviously, if the Heat are in like, there's a lot of value to me. If the Heat are even able to make the first round of the playoffs, there's a lot of value there. You know, for such young guys post Dwayne Wade to really try to figure out what this team is. I think we argued about that the year LeBron left, right? That we wanted this team to go make the playoffs. Now, ultimately, it ended up with Justice Winslow, and we're probably better long term for it, but in the short term, and we're still probably going to be, you know, short sighted about all this. Mm-hmm. I think there's value for a young team now to make the playoffs after Wade leaves. But if the team's bad, I do think that if it looks hopeless by the All-Star break, and I think you're right, in that case, if it does look hopeless, it's clear that Bosch isn't playing. I think if Bosch plays and Dragic is and everybody's healthy, then this team's not going to be in that situation. But if it's bad, I think they probably start looking around and shopping Dragic and trying to see what they can get back for him, because he's really the only guy you can trade, right?
I'm all for the trade to LA for nothing else than to reunite Dragic and Dengens? I don't even Dengens and Dragic? Isn't that what they were calling it last year?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the Dragic and Deng combination?
It was a little Deng. You already forgot? No. Yeah, Dengens and Dragons, yeah. That would be good, right? Maybe that's what the Lakers saw that and they're like, you know what? I really feel like the Heat didn't optimize what they had there. Let's reunite those two All-Stars.
Although you figure Luke Walton's going to be able to connect with a guy like D'Angelo Russell, right? I mean, that was his strong suit.
Or he might not. You know? Luke Walton didn't draft D'Angelo Russell. Maybe he looks at D'Angelo Russell and is like, I don't want this kid. I don't want this guy.
Oh, I mean, he's talented. I mean, I think he's going to be fine.
I do too. I'm just, like, hypothetically. You never
know. Oh, okay.
I don't see that happening. But
it's not going to matter because we're going to acquire Westbrook within the next month.
You really think it's happening?
I really do. I don't think... Riley settles. Are you going to
be a little sad when they trade Winslow away?
I'm not as emotionally attached as some members of Heat Twitter are. I've seen him. I've talked to him.
What about me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you were that big a fan, to be honest with you.
When I saw Justice Winslow grew 2 inches at Summer League, I was all in.
Yeah.
I still don't know if this is confirmed nor denied, but you and I both believe he definitely got taller.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him 2 years in a row now. He does seem a little bit taller. And that's with his hair pulled back. Last year, he had his hair spiked up. So it's clearly right. There's some growth taking place there. But, yeah, I mean, I'll be more sorry to see Dragic go, to be honest with you.
Last question. Which hair did you like better for Winslow?
I like this one better.
Me too. I do.
I don't know why. The other one was more distinct, but then, like, everybody started copying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's past the point now, and I kind of dig this. I think it's a more streamlined look, and I think it's better for him.
It's a little. It's not quite Latrell Sprewell.
Ooh.
You know, it's not to that extreme, right? It's like if it was on if there was a scale from like 0 to Latrell Sprewell, he's like at a 5.
Okay.
You know. Well, when he had like those blowing out braids, I don't even know how else to explain it.
Yeah.
But he's like, I kind of like these. They're like little twist braids. I'm all
yeah, sure.
All right, good. I think we finally got to the biggest topic, which was Winslow's hair.
Only an hour and something into it.
All right, we buried the lead. What are you gonna do? All right, thanks for listening to the Heat Check presented by Locked On Heat. This is our weekly hour long show, so thanks for listening and waiting until we talk about Winslow's hair. Find us on Twitter at Locked On Heat and our email address, lockedonheat@gmail.com, where you can drop your mailbag questions because we want to start doing a weekly mailbag. We'll probably just do a whole day dedicated to mailbag questions. The more we get, the more we can answer, so that'll be really fun. So drop a line, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed, please do. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.